south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came up to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, how about some seminar stories? There are always some wild and crazy things that go on during these seminars that I give. And of course, you know I do these seminars in and around Guatemala, and oftentimes we end up stopping at the most beautiful lake in the world, Lake Atitlan. Now, I'm not just saying this because everyone, including guys from Minnesota and Cleveland, say that a certain lake in their neck of the woods is the most beautiful lake in the world. And who am I to argue that Lake Rusted Horseshoe on Highway 151 north of Cleveland is not the most beautiful lake in the world? However, if you're a world traveler like some of the people that come to these seminars, they'll almost always say the most beautiful lake in the world is Lake Como in Italy. That is, until they've seen Lake Atitlan. I mean, come on, who'd have thought the most beautiful lake in the entire world is in Guatemala? And of course, the U.S. State Department warns you should not go to Guatemala. It's too chaotic and unsafe, which is perfectly fine with all the expats I know down here. Because it's a fact that as soon as the U.S. State Department starts saying a place in Latin America is nice and safe and a good destination, it turns into Costa Rica, and, well, that's when you've got paradise lost. So, if the visiting consensus is that those two lakes are the most beautiful ones in the world, what's the difference? Well, for one thing, Lake Como is in a first world country and it receives millions of visitors a year. And as for Lake Atitlan, well, it's been estimated that probably only 1 in 10,000 North Americans has seen it up close and personal. And as for people I've run into who've seen both Lake Como and Lake Atitlan up close, they all say pretty much the same thing. They like Lake Atitlan slightly more. For one, it seems trapped 50, maybe 100 years back in time, and it's around 5, even 10 times less expensive to hang around and just, well, experience. Oh, and another thing, because so many rich and famous people have cottages and estates on Lake Como, turns out, unless you're boating on the lake itself, a lot of the places are off limits for us peons and regular folks. So anyway, some seminar attendees made it up to the lake, and the day after the formal seminar got over, I headed up to my favorite Lake Atitlan hotel. It cost me a cool 55, or was it 60 bucks a night, including a huge buffet breakfast. Anyway, let's just say a comparable hotel anywhere in the first world with half the view would run a couple hundred bucks a night. Now, just to give you the layout of the lake, surrounding it are about 12 little towns, with only about 3 or 4 of them accessible by car, and the rest by little boats, or what they call lanchas. So each one of these towns has a pier or a dock or two. That's where you pick up a public boat or lancha. They're coming in and out about every half an hour, but it really depends on how fast they fill up with people. The maximum capacity of each boat is around 30, and the charge depends on which little town you're going to or coming from, anywhere from $2 to $3. So anyway, to get to Lake Atitlan, let's say from Guatemala's International Airport, you take a car or a taxi or a shuttle bus, and that could be anywhere from a 2.5 to 3.5 hour ride. And the least expensive way, of course, is chicken bus, which I never recommend. Though clueless gringos and backpackers do it all the time, and that might cost you a whole $3 or $4 with a couple of transfers. However, the cheapest, safest, most reliable way is to take what they call a camioneta. That would be a little van. They're always at the airport. They'll take you to the nearest city, Antigua, for like $10, and then for another $10, you'll grab another camioneta in Antigua, and it'll take you to Lake Atitlan for around $10 more. Now, no matter how you get to Lake Atitlan, you'll always end up first in a city called Panaachel, right on the lake, which is kind of the most touristy town of the area. Very hippie-ish, a lot of backpackers and stuff. And that's pretty much the final destination of most weekend or day travelers. Most tourists, in fact, check that town out for 3 or 4 hours and head right back to the airport or to another destination on their itinerary, like the Caribbean side or the ruins of Tikal, even San Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, because the countries are small and all those places are within a couple of hours' driving distance. And since, like I said, that first town you arrive in, Panaachel, is right on the lake. Most travelers think, well, that's all there is to Lake Atitlan, but man, are they wrong. In fact, I'd say 4 out of 5 travelers never get past that little city to see the other towns. Oh, and by the way, it's a popular destination for Latin American tourists. Only about 1 in 20 tourists there is from the U.S., Canada, or Europe. The rest are from other Latin countries, so basically almost no English is spoken. Now, I'm not trying to give you a travelogue here or promote the place too much, but I'm mentioning this to set you up for a crazy-ass story that could only happen to gringos in Latin America. Now, like I said, there's about 12 or so little towns around the lake. Their population ranging from maybe 500 for the really small towns to up to 20,000 people for the largest town called Santiago. And, like I mentioned, the day trippers go to this little town of Panachel, but that's really where the journey starts, and you have to stay overnight, or at least a couple of nights, to grab a boat in the morning and to hit one of those other little towns, or maybe two or three of those little towns. In fact, you can take in two or three of them in one day. Anyway, the day after the seminar ended, I landed in Panachel and decided to go to the larger town, Santiago. If you get there early in the morning, you could spend the day there and see a lot of cool stuff, plus a very special attraction. They've got a unique little sanctuary for one of those bad boy indigenous saints I mentioned in a previous show. You might remember me talking about those unofficial Catholic saints. A few shows ago, I mentioned how all this came about. How when the conquistadors landed so long ago and the Catholics came in and killed all the shamans and stuff, they tried to convert and recruit all the indigenous people over to Catholicism. Which was not an easy job, because they had their own customs and idols and saints, etc. And the astute leaders of the Catholic Church figured, well, they'll be pretty lenient with these guys and let them have a few of their idols, as long as they embraced all the Catholic icons, teachings, and saints. Now, Catholics up in the first world would never go for this, but down here, things are quite mixed up. In fact, I've heard true blue first world Roman Catholics say, these indigenous people, they're not really Catholics, they embrace the demonic. But to me and so many other expat gringos with a sense of humor, we think the whole thing's rather amusing. Especially the crazy fallen bad boy saint called Maximon, whom I was going to visit that day. By the way, he's the indigenous patron saint of any and all vices. You gotta love it, huh? So where can you find this guy? Well, he's in Santiago Atitlan, where he stays in a little house. Or I should say there's a life-size statue of him in the little house, and I can tell you, you don't want to miss this if you're at the lake. It's a real trip. More on that later. Anyway, I make it down to the dock in Panajachel, the first town you arrive in at the lake, to grab a boat to Santiago de Atitlan. Takes about 20 minutes by boat. By the way, boats are called lanchas. Now, everywhere there are public boats or lanchas that dock every 20 minutes or so. And the captain waits till there are about 30 people in the boat, and they take off. By the way, there are private boats, or lanchas too, and don't get sucked into one of those, because all you gotta do is wait around 10 or 15 minutes, and a boat will fill, and you'll take off for $2 or $3, instead of taking a private lancha, an identical boat, that'll cost you $50. And I've seen many a clueless gringo come as a couple, or maybe a small family, and plunk down $50 to take one of these private jobs. And they're sucked in only because, you see, they've never been to Atitlan before. It's their first trip, and they don't know the drill. Now, you see, the private lancha captains use a trick to snag clueless gringos. They'll spot you a couple of blocks before you get to the dock, and they'll run up and say, "Lancha, lancha," and you'll think, yeah, I need a boat, just what the doctor ordered. And they'll look legit, and they are. They'll have a little tourism badge, usually a beat-up little tourism badge. And you'll mention the town or towns you want to go to, and he'll lead you over to his boat on that dock. And it looks exactly like one of the public lanchas that I mentioned, except because it's private, the only people in that boat will be you, or you and your significant other, or you and your tiny little group or family. Everyone else is packed 30 to a boat on a public launch, paying $3, and you're paying 50. And those are the little tricks you have to watch out for. And I guess one of the reasons you listen to this program, right? Now remember, we're pretty much way off the traditional gringo tourist trail, so everybody will speak Spanish. But then again, who knows, you might want to take a private launch because you don't want to be packed in with the sweaty masses. In that case, you can knock them down to around maybe $30 or $35. You can do some dickering. Now remember, I'm talking $30 to $50 for the boat. That means you can pack in a lot of people yourself in your own group. So it could be worth it if you have 10 or more people. Then it would work out to $3 or less per person. But if it's just a couple or four people, you're really getting ripped off. So don't be an idiot. Now remember, these lanchas look identical, so you could get sucked into that scam. Beware. Then again, I've had this conversation with a few gringos who said, Johnny, you tightwad, that's a hell of a cheap deal. To get a private boat ride around this lake for $30 to $50, man, if I was in the States, I'd pay $200. And that would be on the most beautiful lake in the world, just north of Cleveland. Okay, so maybe I am kind of pitching this show to gringos who want to save some money. Then again, there are gringos who are listening to the show who would drop that kind of dough as a tip for their golf caddy. But here's the thing. If you take the private launch, you're only saving maybe 10 or 15 minutes on the trip. The only advantage is you take off right away, whereas the other public launches are waiting to get their 30 people maximum before they shove off. By the way, none of those little towns on the lake are more than a 20-minute ride on a boat. So anyway, I jump on a boat with a couple of gringos who want to see that bad boy Saint Maximon in Santiago. And then people start piling in, and more people start piling in. And finally, all the seats are filled. People are standing in this little boat, actually stooping because there's a little canvas top on it, protect from rain. It is the rainy season, you know. And there's a little sign in the back where the captain stands, his hand on the tiller, and it says, maximum capacity, 30 people. And by now, there's 40, even 50 people in the boat. Sure, most are very little people, but there are 50 people in the boat. So, being a gringo that can't swim very well, I said, really, quite loudly, you're overloading this boat. It's against regulations. 30 to the boat, no more. Now, I can't remember if I was the first one to say that, but there was a guy and his wife and his two kids from Colombia. Now, remember, we're talking off the gringo tourist trail here. So I guess in the boat, there were probably two Americans, one Canadian, and two European hippies. The rest, indigenous and Latinos. And strangely enough, all around the lake, you'll find lots and lots of neo-quasi and occasionally vintage, overripe, scruffy, and sometimes gentrified geriatric hippies and young hippie clones. And though wine may improve with age, hippies don't. So why and what's that all about? Well, because you could say there's absolute freedom there. It's like it was back in the 50s and 60s in the States. In fact, you could be there for days and never see a single cop. And there's no violence, virtually no crime unless you're walking around at night with a wallet on your head. Or big, and I mean really big, into the drug scene. Meanwhile, back in the boat, it's overloaded by about 20 people. And the Colombian guy really started getting pissed. And he started saying very loudly, in Spanish of course, that he was not going to allow his kids in a boat that was overloaded. On top of that, there wasn't a single life preserver in the boat, and they're required too. By the way, they're called chalecos here. Chaleco. Which basically translates to vest. Then another guy chimed in saying he couldn't swim either, and he yelled, I want my chaleco. And the captain's little helper jumped up on the dock, ran over to a little building that looked like an outhouse, and pulled out some twisted, smudged, and decrepit life jackets. He tossed about 15 into the boat, figuring that might quell the impending mutiny. So there wasn't one for everyone, that's for sure. Now about overloading that boat, the whole thing boils down to this, which I found out later. These captains or pilots, pilotos as they call them, do not own these boats. They rent them, just like most taxis and tuk-tuks, buses and vans. That's the setup through most of Latin America. These poor little schmucks that drive these things could never afford to buy the equipment themselves. So it's always understood that there's some guy who owns a bunch of them and he'll rent them out by the day. So anyway, all the captains and pilots are renting, and it's a fixed rate per day. So the object is to pack in as many people as you can at any given time and be clever about it because there is a lot of competition. If you pull up to one of those docks, you'll see that there might be three, four, even a half dozen little lanchas parked there. And each guy has to round up people quickly and coerce them into his boat so he can shove up faster than the next guy. So by now, there was a lot of hubbub going down in our boat. Now, neither the captain or his helper said a word while all the shouting was going down. And I mean, there was shouting. Especially from the Colombian guy who looked like he had a lot of dough. Designer, real leather handbag, Nikon professional camera getup. All the stuff only stupid, clueless gringos would be carrying on a vacation like that. Anyway, like I said, the helper and the captain were playing dumb. But they weren't about to take paying customers off that overloaded boat. Oh, and another thing. About 3/4 of the passengers on that boat were little indigenous guys and gals in their typical indigenous outfits. In fact, every tribe, and I think there's 25 tribes in Guatemala, has a complete different style of indigenous robe. And pretty much only they can tell the difference. They can tell each other apart, but we can't. And don't think they're dressed like that to amuse or impress the tourists either. That's how they dress, all the time. I know it sounds like a cliche, but they all look alike to us. Their clothes, anyway. Now, like I said, about three quarters of all boats going around that little lake are filled with indigenous people, and I discovered by hook and crook they don't pay the same price as gringos and foreigners and even local Latinos. When we pay $2 or $3, they pay about $1. In fact, it's all pretty clandestine. They shove the dough in the hand of the little helper so fast you can barely see how much it is. But if you look close, you'll see it's a lot less than you pay. On top of that, nobody's talking. In fact, I've asked a few indigenous people what they pay to ride on those boats, and they say, depends. Depends. Of course, they all speak Spanish, but they also speak their own indigenous languages, which they quickly break into when they don't want others to figure out what they're talking about. Which is, of course, why my parents spoke Swahili around the house. Just kidding. So anyway, when they've got three quarters of the boat paying about $1 for their passage, and the rest of us gringos and backpacker tourists paying $3, you can see why they overload their boats if they can get away with it. Now, like I said, the captain and his helper were unresponsive. They did bring some life jackets, but the commotion was still going down about having the boat overloaded. Then, that's when I pulled rank. I said, look, smile while I take your photo. Then I said, I'm from Inguat. Those are the initials of the Guatemalan Tourism Authority. I said, be prepared to be famous and probably fined heavily. That's when he ducked his head low, pulled his baseball cap over his eyes, and did everything possible to dodge that photo. Now, of course, I was BSing him, but I thought it might throw the fear of God into him, or at least the fear of Maximón, the local bad boy indigenous patron saint I was on my way to see. That's when the rich Colombian guy stood up and said, we're leaving. Me and my family won't stay in a boat that's overloaded. So they got out, and we got out, and the boat took off, still overloaded by around 5 or 10 people, and short on life jackets. So we just jumped into the next available boat. It was half filled already, and boy, I'll tell you what, that captain had seen and heard everything that went down in that previous boat. So he meticulously counted everyone until he got to 30, handed everyone life jackets from that little outhouse on the dock, and actually apologized to me and the Colombian guy for the other captain's behavior and lack of concern. Though I think the real reason he was sucking up to us is because he thought I really was from the Ministry of Tourism, because I saw the captain's little helper mouth the word Inguat in his ear before we got on board. Inguat is the pronunciation of the first letters in the Department of Tourism, etc., etc., in Guatemala. And actually, they're just another corrupt, toothless agency of the government, but they can and will act if, for example, a hotel gets too many complaints or a gringo dies of food poisoning at a restaurant. In Latin America, you know, it's government by crisis. Sound familiar? And, you know, thinking about that great service we got on that second boat, I think I just might Photoshop me an Inguat badge. Could come in handy, you know? So then, what about the purpose of that trip? To see that bad boy Saint Maximón? Well, it was really worth the trip. Now, when you go to the house that Maximón happens to be in, and by the way, every year on May 8th, right after the Catholic holiday of Semana Santa, which would be Easter, he changes houses. That's every single year. He's kind of like a traveling drunken uncle who actually commands some respect. Now, I don't know how they select a house, but you're not going to find him in a luxury palace. It's always kind of a scruffy room, very dark, the window shades drawn, even boarded up, and there's always a coffin in the room with Christmas tree lights all over it. I don't get the connection, but I don't get a lot of things in Latin America. Anyway, people are kneeling down in front of his life-size statue, and believe me, he's no Andre the Giant. He's a little wooden guy about 5 foot tall, eyes closed, prune-faced, with a lit cigarette or cigar in his mouth at all times, money stuffed in his pants, belt, and shirt pocket, kind of like an indigenous pole dancer, and people kneeling, lighting candles, making offerings to him, the place heavy with incense and cigarette and cigar smoke, and everyone there is praying for him to do one of three things. Help him have luck with business and money, help them with love and romance, or help him get even with someone who's done them wrong. Because remember, he's a bad boy, Saint. Can do certain nasty trickster stuff when he's in the mood. Oh, and by the way, the spelling of this guy Maximón's name is M-A-X-I-M-O-N. M-A-X-I-M-O-N. Look it up. Anyway, like I said, every year he's in a different scruffy little house or location, so you have to ask around. Ask a tuk-tuk driver. He'll tell you where he is this year. Better yet, give the tuk-tuk driver $1 and he'll take you there. However, don't be surprised if you have to walk down some bad little alleyways and dirt corridors. In fact, it could be a little bit scary. But don't worry, there's really no crime in these little towns, none to speak of. Anyway, if you're on a pilgrimage to see Maximón, They say you'll be protected and no harm will ever come to you. Unless, of course, you take pictures of Maximan and don't pay the buck and a half the owners of the house charge. Because, you see, if you steal a picture of him without paying, you can be sure he'll do some of his bad boy tricks on you. Anyway, if you're in the area, it's a real trip. I'll tell you, it's nothing like visiting Grant's tomb. It's closer to visiting the set of The Walking Dead. The whole thing's kind of mysterious and spooky, which makes it all the cooler, doesn't it? Now, those of you, of course, who are watching us on YouTube will get to see Maximon in all his glory, or whatever you want to call it. By the way, gringos and expats who visited Lake Atitlan often say, man, I would just love to live here the rest of my life. Not next door to Maximon or in the neighborhood, but anywhere else. Because pretty much everywhere, the views are absolutely spectacular. You have to see it to believe it. So visitors almost always say, Johnny, where are the best places for a gringo expat to live around the lake? What towns are safe? What are rents like? What about potable water and sewage, land costs, internet, phone service, and all that? Well, let's just say you're going to be truly amazed at what kind of land and housing deals you can get in the various towns and locations around the lake. In fact, if you're watching this on YouTube right now, you're going to see some of the photos I took just this week. Listings of properties for rent and for sale all around the lake, all of them with the $1 million, or I should say $10 million views. In fact, there's a house for rent I'm putting up on YouTube. I believe it's $600 a month with, like I said, a $10 million view. Anyway, a lot of people have asked me about Airbnbs too. Yep, they're popping up all over Latin America. And when you talk about Airbnbs, you know the people that put them up on the internet are very savvy and you're gonna most likely pay gringo prices. Why? Because it's gringos and world travelers and wealthy Latins that look up on the sites to find these places. Which is why I occasionally receive an email from people saying, look at Johnny, I'm checking out Airbnb prices in Central or South America, whatever. And you know, they're pretty expensive. Maybe they're very cool places, but man, those are first world prices. Well, what do you expect? Let's face it, if you were putting up your house or apartment as an Airbnb for rent, wouldn't you want to squeeze the last dime you can out of the place? That's exactly what gringos do. And who are these people putting up Airbnbs? They're mostly gringos or gringo wannabes with dough. Sure, there are a few average types doing it too, but when it comes to Latin America, most gringos and expats would not want to stay in a house of an average Latin, because to us that would be lower middle class or worse. Again, it's all about the neighborhood. And I know there are some very nice Airbnbs in very bad locations, and some of them in very nice, safe, good locations too, but so far out and away from the city and the action or wherever you're hanging out that you're going to have to rent a car to get around, and that'll cost you $50 or so a day. In fact, I can tell you about a very, very nice Airbnb in Guatemala City. I know the lady who owns it. She's a very nice person, very honest, pretty much first world all the way. But that Airbnb is in a very dangerous area of town, even though it's centrally located and a huge superhighway goes right by it. So then how are you going to know that? Plus, it gets very top ratings on the Airbnb TripAdvisor, or however they rate those things. So yes, you can have a very nice place, but when you step outside, that's when the problems begin, unless, of course, you have your own car or transportation. So you really have to make an honest assessment of the neighborhood, not just the place. Then again, I know of some Airbnbs in spectacular Latin neighborhoods. Gated, guarded, totally protected. All the amenities, tennis courts, swimming pools, saunas, jacuzzis, super high quality gyms and such. And some too may seem like pretty good or even great deals. But many of them are way out in the burbs. 5, 10, 20, 30, even 50 kilometers from where the action is or where you want to hang. So you will need transportation. But how are you going to know that if you haven't done a lot of investigation? Would be great, huh, if you found a fantastic Airbnb, all the photos look terrific, but you had to pay 10 or 20 bucks for a taxi every time you wanted to head out. I mean, what good is it to spend 40 bucks a night on a nice Airbnb when you spend 50 bucks on taxis every day? Because again, you're not renting an Airbnb just to hang out in the neighborhood. You're in a foreign country, you got places to go, things to do, sights you want to see, right? But I'm not poo-pooing the Airbnb idea. It's a great one, and there are a lot of nice, cool ones out there. Great locations, reasonably priced. But I'll tell you right now, I know some hotels that can compete head-to-head with a lot of the nice Airbnbs. And you got the hotel amenities, maid service every day, and you're right in the center of the action. And since Airbnbs seem to be the fad hot buzzword now, people are talking about it and everyone wants to get into the act. The fact is, I wish they would. That would bring in a lot more competition and the prices will drop and that would be good for everyone. I guess except for the B&B owners. However, I don't think 1 in 1,000 people is thinking about what's going to happen shortly, the so-called big blowout or greater depression. You've heard that term. Because that's when you have to ask yourself, who's going to be traveling? Who's going to have the dough? And who's going to be able to get permission to leave the country to do that? Because that's what it's coming to. Which is why when gonna-bes and wannabes and expats who come down here to live say, Johnny, I'd like to build a hotel or have a B&B or whatever. I'm thinking, yeah, you're the one who's not thinking too far ahead into the future. There's a huge real estate bubble down here right now. It's becoming a terrific renter's market in many places. For example, you could rent a brand new house that's never been lived in a gated, guarded community, 1,500 to 2,000 square feet, even more, for around, get this, $400 a month. And yet there's cranes all over. They're still building everywhere. Like there's no end and no tomorrow. So is that what you really want to do? Start an Airbnb, mom and pop, bed and breakfast? Start something up in a tourism-related industry? Well, I'll ask that question again. Who's going to be going on vacation anywhere when the next shoe drops? When the so-called Greater Depression kicks in? Remember, it'll be kicking in the first world, not much down here. So yes, do come down, buy some land, build a house, buy some distressed property, whatever. But my advice, stay away from the hotel and the hospitality business. It might seem like it's doing well now, but first, look at the reasons you're coming down to Latin America in the first place. Because you see bad, bad things on the horizon, right? And another thing, there are tens of thousands of three-bedroom houses in gated, guarded communities here in Latin America that are completely vacant. They're brand new, too. And for the owners of those developments, there's no dough coming in. And when they find out, they can list those properties as Airbnbs. What's that going to do to the hospitality business? Look out. Now, of course, I'm talking off the gringo tourist trail now, because if you go to Costa Rica, Panama, most of Mexico, you won't find those kind of deals at all, because their economies are still being pumped up by gringo tourism. And when that type of tourism grinds to a halt because, well, it's just not a priority anymore, just think about the reasons why you're listening to this program and think about your plan B and what will work and what won't. That said, we're getting towards the end of the program right now. Don't forget to go to www.thenewexpat.com. Check out expert expat blogger John Galt and hear what he's got to say. He's had a few years of boots on the ground and runs into amazing things all the time. And don't forget to check out my YouTube channel to see all the great visuals that go along with the show. And finally, for all who are wondering when my next Expat Insider Seminar will be taking place, it'll be in early January 2017. So if you want to get on the early bird discount list, send me an email.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.
South of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came up to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, how about some seminar stories? There are always some wild and crazy things that go on during these seminars that I give. And of course, you know I do these seminars in and around Guatemala, and oftentimes we end up stopping at the most beautiful lake in the world, Lake Atitlan. Now, I'm not just saying this because everyone, including guys from Minnesota and Cleveland, say that a certain lake in their neck of the woods is the most beautiful lake in the world. And who am I to argue that Lake Rusted Horseshoe on Highway 151 north of Cleveland is not the most beautiful lake in the world? However, if you're a world traveler like some of the people that come to these seminars, they'll almost always say the most beautiful lake in the world is Lake Como in Italy. That is, until they've seen Lake Atitlan. I mean, come on, who'd have thought the most beautiful lake in the entire world is in Guatemala? And of course, the U.S. State Department warns you should not go to Guatemala. It's too chaotic and unsafe. Which is perfectly fine with all the expats I know down here. Because it's a fact that as soon as the U.S. State Department starts saying a place in Latin America is nice and safe and a good destination, it turns into Costa Rica and, well, that's when you've got paradise lost. So, if the visiting consensus is that those two lakes are the most beautiful ones in the world, what's the difference? Well, for one thing, Lake Como is in a first world country and it receives millions of visitors a year. And as for Lake Atitlan, Well, it's been estimated that probably only 1 in 10,000 North Americans has seen it up close and personal. And as for people I've run into who've seen both Lake Cuomo and Lake Atitlan up close, they all say pretty much the same thing. They like Lake Atitlan slightly more. For one, it seems trapped 50, maybe 100 years back in time, and it's around 5, even 10 times less expensive to hang around and just, well, experience. Oh, and another thing, because so many rich and famous people have cottages and estates on Lake Cuomo, turns out, unless you're boating on the lake itself, a lot of the places are off-limits for us peons and regular folks. So anyway, some seminar attendees made it up to the lake, and the day after the formal seminar got over, I headed up to my favorite Lake Atitlan Hotel. It cost me a cool 55, or was it 60 bucks a night, including a huge buffet breakfast. Anyway, let's just say a comparable hotel anywhere in the first world with half the view would run a couple hundred bucks a night. Now, just to give you the layout of the lake, surrounding it are about 12 little towns, with only about 3 or 4 of them accessible by car, and the rest by little boats, or what they call lanchas. So each one of these towns has a pier or a dock or two. That's where you pick up a public boat or lancha. They're coming in and out about every half an hour, but it really depends on how fast they fill up with people. The maximum capacity of each boat is around 30, and the charge depends on which little town you're going to or coming from, anywhere from $2 to $3. So anyway, to get to Lake Atitlan, let's say from Guatemala's International Airport, you take a car or a taxi or a shuttle bus, and that could be anywhere from a 2.5 to 3.5 hour ride. And the least expensive way, of course, is chicken bus, which I never recommend. Though clueless gringos and backpackers do it all the time, and that might cost you a whole $3 or $4 with a couple of transfers. However, the cheapest, safest, most reliable way is to take what they call a camioneta. That would be a little van. They're always at the airport. They'll take you to the nearest city, Antigua, for like $10, and then for another 10, you'll grab another camioneta in Antigua, and it'll take you to Lake Atitlan for around $10 more. Now, no matter how you get to Lake Atitlan, you'll always end up first in a city called Panaachel, right on the lake, which is kind of the most touristy town of the area. Very hippie-ish, a lot of backpackers and stuff. And that's pretty much the final destination of most weekend or day travelers. Most tourists, in fact, check that town out for 3 or 4 hours and head right back to the airport or to another destination on their itinerary, like the Caribbean side or the ruins of Tikal, even San Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, because the countries are small and all those places are within a couple of hours driving distance. And since, like I said, that first town you arrive in, Panaachel, is right on the lake, most travelers think, well, that's all there is to Lake Atitlan, but man, are they wrong. In fact, I'd say 4 out of 5 travelers never get past that little city to see the other towns. Oh, and by the way, it's a popular destination for Latin American tourists. Only about 1 in 20 tourists there is from the U.S., Canada, or Europe. The rest are from other Latin countries, so basically almost no English is spoken. Now, I'm not trying to give you a travelogue here or promote the place too much, but I'm mentioning this to set you up for a crazy-ass story that could only happen to gringos in Latin America. Now, like I said, there's about 12 or so little towns around the lake, their population ranging from maybe 500 for the really small towns to up to 20,000 people for the largest town called Santiago. And, like I mentioned, the day trippers go to this little town of Panaachel, but that's really where the journey starts, and you have to stay overnight, or at least a couple of nights, to grab a boat in the morning and to hit one of those other little towns, or maybe 2 or 3 of those little towns. In fact, you can take in 2 or 3 of them in one day. Anyway, the day after the seminar ended, I landed in Panaachel and decided to go to the larger town, Santiago. If you get there early in the morning, you could spend the day there and see a lot of cool stuff, plus a very special attraction. They've got a unique little sanctuary for one of those bad boy indigenous saints I mentioned in a previous show. You might remember me talking about those unofficial Catholic saints. A few shows ago, I mentioned how all this came about. How when the conquistadors landed so long ago and the Catholics came in and killed all the shamans and stuff, they tried to convert and recruit all the indigenous people over to Catholicism. Which was not an easy job because they had their own customs and idols and saints, etc. And the astute leaders of the Catholic Church figured, well, they'll be pretty lenient with these guys and let them have a few of their idols as long as they embraced all the Catholic icons, teachings, and saints. Now, Catholics up in the first world would never go for this, but down here, things are quite mixed up. In fact, I've heard true blue First World Roman Catholics say these indigenous people, they're not really Catholics. They embrace the demonic. But to me and so many other expat gringos with a sense of humor, we think the whole thing's rather amusing. Especially the crazy fallen bad boy saint called Maximon, whom I was going to visit that day. By the way, he's the indigenous patron saint of any and all vices. You gotta love it, huh? So where can you find this guy? Well, he's in Santiago Atitlan, where he stays in a little house. Or I should say there's a life-size statue of him in a little house, and I can tell you, you don't want to miss this if you're at the lake. It's a real trip. More on that later. Anyway, I make it down to the dock in Panajachel, the first town you arrive in at the lake, to grab a boat to Santiago de Atitlan. Takes about 20 minutes by boat. By the way, boats are called lanchas. Now, everywhere there are public boats or lanchas that dock every 20 minutes or so, and the captain waits till there are about 30 people in the boat, and they take off. By the way, there are private boats or lanchas too, and don't get sucked into one of those, because all you got to do is wait around 10 or 15 minutes, and a boat will fill, and you'll take off for $2 or $3, instead of taking a private lancha, an identical boat, that'll cost you $50. And I've seen many a clueless gringo come as a couple or maybe a small family and plunk down $50 to take one of these private jobs. And they're sucked in only because, you see, they've never been to Atitlan before. It's their first trip, and they don't know the drill. Now, you see, the private lancha captains use a trick to snag clueless gringos. They'll spot you a couple of blocks before you get to the dock, and they'll run up and say, "Lancha, lancha," and you'll think, yeah, I need a boat, just what the doctor ordered. And they'll look legit, and they are. They'll have a little tourism badge, usually a beat-up little tourism badge. And you'll mention the town or towns you want to go to, and he'll lead you over to his boat on that dock. And it looks exactly like one of the public lanchas that I mentioned, except because it's private, the only people in that boat will be you, or you and your significant other, or you and your tiny little group or family. Everyone else is packed 30 to a boat on a public launch, paying $3, and you're paying 50. And those are the little tricks you have to watch out for. And I guess one of the reasons you listen to this program, right? Now remember, we're pretty much way off the traditional gringo tourist trail, so everybody will speak Spanish. But then again, who knows, you might want to take a private launch because you don't want to be packed in with the sweaty masses. In that case, you can knock them down to around maybe $30 or $35. You can do some dickering. Now remember, I'm talking $30 to $50 for the boat. That means you can pack in a lot of people yourself and your own group. So it could be worth it if you have 10 or more people. Then it would work out to $3 or less per person. But if it's just a couple or four people, you're really getting ripped off. So don't be an idiot. Now remember, these lanchas look identical, so you could get sucked into that scam. Beware. Then again, I've had this conversation with a few gringos who said, "Johnny, you tightwad, that's a hell of a cheap deal. To get a private boat ride around this lake for $30 to $50, man, if I was in the States, I'd pay $200. And that would be on the most beautiful lake in the world, just north of Cleveland. Okay, so maybe I am kind of pitching this show to gringos who want to save some money. Then again, there are gringos who are listening to this show who would drop that kind of dough as a tip for their golf caddy. But here's the thing, if you take the private launch, you're only saving maybe 10 or 15 minutes on the trip. The only advantage is you take off right away, whereas the other public launches are waiting to get their 30 people maximum before they shove off. By the way, none of those little towns on the lake are more than a 20-minute ride on a boat. So anyway, I jump on a boat with a couple of gringos who want to see that bad boy Saint Maximon in Santiago. And then people start piling in, and more people start piling in. And finally, all the seats are filled. People are standing in this little boat, actually stooping because there's a little canvas top on it, protect from rain. It is the rainy season, you know. And there's a little sign in the back where the captain stands, his hand on the tiller, and it says, maximum capacity, 30 people. And by now, there's 40, even 50 people in the boat. Sure, most are very little people, but there are 50 people in the boat. So being a gringo that can't swim very well, I said, really, quite loudly, "You're overloading this boat. It's against regulations. 30 to the boat, no more." Now, I can't remember if I was the first one to say that, but there was a guy and his wife and his two kids from Colombia. Now, remember, we're talking off the gringo tourist trail here, so I guess in the boat there were probably two Americans, one Canadian, and two European hippies. The rest, indigenous and Latinos. And strangely enough, all around the lake you'll find lots and lots of neo-quasi and occasionally vintage, overripe, scruffy, and sometimes gentrified geriatric hippies and young hippie clones. And though wine may improve with age, hippies don't. So why and what's that all about? Well, because you could say there's absolute freedom there. It's like it was back in the 50s and 60s in the States. In fact, you could be there for days and never see a single cop. And there's no violence, virtually no crime unless you're walking around at night with a wallet on your head. Or big, and I mean really big, into the drug scene. Meanwhile, back in the boat, it's overloaded by about 20 people. And the Colombian guy really started getting pissed. And he started saying very loudly, in Spanish of course, that he was not going to allow his kids in a boat that was overloaded. On top of that, there wasn't a single life preserver in the boat, and they're required too. By the way, they're called chalecos here. Chaleco. Which basically translates to vest. Then another guy chimed in saying he couldn't swim either, and he yelled, "I want my chaleco." And the captain's little helper jumped up on the dock, ran over to a little building that looked like an outhouse, and pulled out some twisted, smudged, and decrepit life jackets. He tossed about 15 into the boat, figuring that might quell the impending mutiny. So there wasn't one for everyone, that's for sure. Now, about overloading that boat, the whole thing boils down to this, which I found out later. These captains, or pilots, pilotos as they call them, do not own these boats. They rent them, just like most taxis and tuk-tuks, buses and vans. That's the setup through most of Latin America. These poor little schmucks that drive these things could never afford to buy the equipment themselves, so it's always understood that there's some guy who owns a bunch of them and he'll rent them out by the day. So anyway, all the captains and pilots are renting, and it's a fixed rate per day. So the object is to pack in as many people as you can at any given time and be clever about it because there is a lot of competition. If you pull up to one of those docks, you'll see that there might be 3, 4, even 6 little lanchas parked there. And each guy has to round up people quickly and coerce them into his boat so he can shove up faster than the next guy. So by now, there was a lot of hubbub going down in our boat. Now, neither the captain or his helper said a word while all the shouting was going down. And I mean, there was shouting. Especially from the Colombian guy who looked like he had a lot of dough. Designer, real leather handbag, Nikon professional camera getup. All the stuff only stupid, clueless gringos would be carrying on a vacation like that. Anyway, like I said, the helper and the captain were playing dumb. But they weren't about to take paying customers off that overloaded boat. Oh, and another thing. About 3/4 of the passengers on that boat were little indigenous guys and gals in their typical indigenous outfits. In fact, every tribe, and I think there's 25 tribes in Guatemala, has a complete different style of indigenous robe. And pretty much only they can tell the difference. They can tell each other apart, but we can't. And don't think they're dressed like that to amuse or impress the tourists either. That's how they dress, all the time. I know it sounds like a cliche, but they all look alike to us. Their clothes, anyway. Now, like I said, about 3/4 of all boats going around that little lake are filled with indigenous people, and I discovered by hook and crook they don't pay the same price as gringos and foreigners and even local Latinos. When we pay $2 or $3, they pay about $1. In fact, it's all pretty clandestine. They shove the dough in the hand of the little helper so fast you can barely see how much it is. But if you look close, you'll see it's a lot less than you pay. On top of that, nobody's talking. In fact, I've asked a few indigenous people what they pay to ride on those boats, and they say, "Depends. Depends." Of course, they all speak Spanish, but they also speak their own indigenous languages, which they quickly break into when they don't want others to figure out what they're talking about. Which is, of course, why my parents spoke Swahili around the house. Just kidding. So anyway, when they've got 3/4 of the boat paying about $1 for their passage, and the rest of us gringos and backpacker tourists paying $3, you can see why they overload their boats if they can get away with it. Now, like I said, the captain and his helper were unresponsive. They did bring some life jackets, but the commotion was still going down about having the boat overloaded. Then, that's when I pulled rank. I said, "Look, smile while I take your photo." Then I said, "I'm from INGUAT." Those are the initials of the Guatemalan Tourism Authority. I said, "Be prepared to be famous and probably fined heavily." That's when he ducked his head low, pulled his baseball cap over his eyes, and did everything possible to dodge that photo. Now, of course, I was BSing him, but I thought it might throw the fear of God into him, or at least the fear of Maximón, the local bad boy indigenous patron saint I was on my way to see. That's when the rich Colombian guy stood up and said, "We're leaving. Me and my family won't stay in a boat that's overloaded." So they got out, and we got out, and the boat took off, still overloaded by around 5 or 10 people, and short on life jackets. So we just jumped into the next available boat. It was half filled already, and boy, I'll tell you what, that captain had seen and heard everything that went down in that previous boat. So he meticulously counted everyone until he got to 30, handed everyone life jackets from that little outhouse on the dock, and actually apologized to me and the Colombian guy for the other captain's behavior and lack of concern. Though I think the real reason he was sucking up to us is because he thought I really was from the Ministry of Tourism, because I saw the captain's little helper mouth the word Ingwat in his ear before we got on board. Ingwat is the pronunciation of the first letters in the Department of Tourism, etc., etc., in Guatemala. And actually, they're just another corrupt, toothless agency of the government, but they can and will act if, for example, a hotel gets too many complaints or a gringo dies of food poisoning at a restaurant. In Latin America, you know, it's government by crisis. Sound familiar? And you know, thinking about that great service we got on that second boat, I think I just might Photoshop me an Ingwat badge. Could come in handy, you know? So then, what about the purpose of that trip? To see that bad boy Saint Maximon? Well, it was really worth the trip. Now, when you go to the house that Maximon happens to be in, and by the way, every year on May 8th, right after the Catholic holiday of Semana Santa, which would be Easter, he changes houses. That's every single year. He's kind of like a traveling drunken uncle who actually commands some respect. Now, I don't know how they select a house, but you're not going to find him in a luxury palace. It's always kind of a scruffy room, very dark, the window shades drawn, even boarded up, and there's always a coffin in the room with Christmas tree lights all over it. I don't get the connection, but I don't get a lot of things in Latin America. Anyway, people are kneeling down in front of his life-size statue, and believe me, he's no Andre the Giant. He's a little wooden guy about 5 foot tall, eyes closed, prune-faced, with a lit cigarette or cigar in his mouth at all times, money stuffed in his pants, belt, and shirt pocket, kind of like an indigenous pole dancer, and people kneeling, lighting candles, making offerings to him, the place heavy with incense and cigarette and cigar smoke, and everyone there is praying for him to do one of three things. Help him have luck with business and money, help them with love and romance, or help him get even with someone who's done them wrong. Because remember, he's a bad boy saint and can do certain nasty trickster stuff when he's in the mood. Oh, and by the way, the spelling of this guy Maximon's name is M-A-X-I-M-O-N. M-A-X-I-M-O-N. Look it up. Anyway, like I said, every year he's in a different scruffy little house or location, so you have to ask around. Ask a tuk-tuk driver. He'll tell you where he is this year. Better yet, give the tuk-tuk driver a buck and he'll take you there. However, don't be surprised if you have to walk down some bad little alleyways and dirt corridors. In fact, it could be a little bit scary. But don't worry, there's really no crime in these little towns, none to speak of. Anyway, if you're on a pilgrimage to see Maximon, they say you'll be protected and no harm will ever come to you. Unless, of course, you take pictures of Maximon and don't pay the buck and a half the owners of the house charge. Because you see, if you steal a picture of him without paying, you can be sure he'll do some of his bad boy tricks on you. Anyway, if you're in the area, it's a real trip. I'll tell you, it's nothing like visiting Grant's tomb. It's closer to visiting the set of The Walking Dead. The whole thing's kind of mysterious and spooky, which makes it all the cooler, doesn't it? Now, those of you, of course, who are watching us on YouTube will get to see Maximon in all his glory, or whatever you want to call it. By the way, gringos and expats who visited Lake Atitlan often say, man, I would just love to live here the rest of my life. Not next door to Maximon or in the neighborhood, but anywhere else. Because pretty much everywhere, the views are absolutely spectacular. You have to see it to believe it. So visitors almost always say, Johnny, where are the best places for a gringo expat to live around the lake? What towns are safe? What are rents like? What about potable water and sewage? Land costs, internet, phone service, and all that. Well, let's just say you're going to be truly amazed at what kind of land and housing deals you can get in the various towns and locations around the lake. In fact, if you're watching this on YouTube right now, you're going to see some of the photos I took just this week. Listings of properties for rent and for sale all around the lake, all of them with the $1 million, or I should say $10 million views. In fact, there's a house for rent I'm putting up on YouTube. I believe it's $600 a month with, like I said, a $10 million view. Anyway, a lot of people have asked me about Airbnbs, too. Yep, they're popping up all over Latin America. And when you talk about Airbnbs, you know the people that put them up on the internet are very savvy, and you're gonna most likely pay gringo prices. Why? Because it's gringos and world travelers and wealthy Latins that look up on the sites to find these places. Which is why I occasionally receive an email from people saying, look at Johnny, I'm checking out Airbnb prices in Central or South America, whatever. And you know, they're pretty expensive. Maybe they're very cool places, but man, those are first world prices. Well, what do you expect? Let's face it, if you were putting up your house or apartment as an Airbnb for rent, wouldn't you want to squeeze the last dime you can out of the place? That's exactly what gringos do. And who are these people putting up Airbnbs? They're mostly gringos or gringo wannabes with dough. Sure, there are a few average types doing it too, but when it comes to Latin America, most gringos and expats would not want to stay in a house of an average Latin, because to us that would be lower middle class or worse. Again, it's all about the neighborhood. And I know there are some very nice Airbnbs in very bad locations, and some of them in very nice, safe, good locations too, but so far out and away from the city and the action or wherever you're hanging out that you're going to have to rent a car to get around, and that'll cost you $50 or so a day. In fact, I can tell you about a very, very nice Airbnb in Guatemala City. I know the lady who owns it. She's a very nice person, very honest, pretty much first world all the way. But that Airbnb is in a very dangerous area of town, even though it's centrally located and a huge superhighway goes right by it. So then how are you going to know that? Plus, it gets very top ratings on the Airbnb TripAdvisor, or however they rate those things. So yes, you can have a very nice place, but when you step outside, that's when the problems begin, unless, of course, you have your own car or transportation. So you really have to make an honest assessment of the neighborhood, not just the place. Then again, I know of some Airbnbs in spectacular Latin neighborhoods, gated, guarded, totally protected, all the amenities, tennis courts, swimming pools, saunas, jacuzzis, super high-quality gyms and such. And some, too, may seem like pretty good or even great deals, but many of them are way out in the burbs. 5, 10, 20, 30, even 50 kilometers from where the action is or where you want to hang. So you will need transportation, but how are you going to know that if you haven't done a lot of investigation? Would be great, huh, if you found a fantastic Airbnb, all the photos look terrific, but you had to pay 10 or 20 bucks for a taxi every time you wanted to head out. I mean, what good is it to spend 40 bucks a night on a nice Airbnb when you spend 50 bucks on taxis every day? Because again, you're not renting an Airbnb just to hang out in the neighborhood. You're in a foreign country, you got places to go, things to do, sights you want to see, right? But I'm not poo-pooing the Airbnb idea. It's a great one, and there are a lot of nice, cool ones out there. Great locations, reasonably priced. But I'll tell you right now, I know some hotels that can compete head-to-head with a lot of the nice Airbnbs, and you got the hotel amenities, maid service every day, and you're right in the center of the action. And since Airbnbs seem to be the fad, hot buzzword now, people are talking about it and everyone wants to get into the act. The fact is, I wish they would. That would bring in a lot more competition and the prices will drop and that would be good for everyone. I guess except for the B&B owners. However, I don't think 1 in 1,000 people is thinking about what's going to happen shortly. The so-called big blowout or greater depression. You've heard that term. Because that's when you have to ask yourself, who's going to be traveling? Who's going to have the dough, and who's going to be able to get permission to leave the country to do that, because that's what it's coming to. Which is why when gonna-bes and wannabes and expats who come down here to live say, Johnny, I'd like to build a hotel or have a B&B or whatever, I'm thinking, yeah, you're the one who's not thinking too far ahead into the future. There's a huge real estate bubble down here right now. It's becoming a terrific renter's market in many places. For example, you could rent a brand new house that's never been lived in. In a gated, guarded community, 1,500 to 2,000 square feet, even more, for around, get this, $400 a month. And yet there's cranes all over, they're still building everywhere, like there's no end and no tomorrow. So is that what you really want to do? Start an Airbnb, mom and pop, bed and breakfast, start something up in a tourism-related industry? Well, I'll ask that question again. Who's going to be going on vacation anywhere when the next shoe drops? When the so-called Greater Depression kicks in? Remember, it'll be kicking in the first world, not much down here. So yes, do come down, buy some land, build a house, buy some distressed property, whatever. But my advice, stay away from the hotel and the hospitality business. It might seem like it's doing well now, but first, look at the reasons you're coming down to Latin America in the first place. Because you see bad, bad things on the horizon, right? And another thing, there are tens of thousands of three-bedroom houses in gated, guarded communities here in Latin America that are completely vacant. They're brand new, too. And for the owners of those developments, there's no dough coming in. And when they find out, they can list those properties as Airbnbs. What's that going to do to the hospitality business? Look out. Now, of course, I'm talking off the gringo tourist trail now, because if you go to Costa Rica, Panama, most of Mexico, you won't find those kind of deals at all, because their economies are still being pumped up by gringo tourism. And when that type of tourism grinds to a halt because, well, it's just not a priority anymore, just think about the reasons why you're listening to this program and think about your plan B and what will work and what won't. That said, we're getting towards the end of the program right now. Don't forget to go to www.thenewexpat.com. Check out expert expat blogger John Galt and hear what he's got to say. He's had a few years of boots on the ground and runs into amazing things all the time. And don't forget to check out my YouTube channel to see all the great visuals that go along with the show. And finally, for all who are wondering when my next Expat Insider Seminar will be taking place, it'll be in early January 2017. So if you want to get on the early bird discount list, send me an email.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me, just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.
South of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, how about some seminar stories? There are always some wild and crazy things that go on during these seminars that I give. And of course, you know I do these seminars in and around Guatemala, and oftentimes we end up stopping at the most beautiful lake in the world, Lake Atitlan. Now, I'm not just saying this because everyone, including guys from Minnesota and Cleveland, say that a certain lake in their neck of the woods is the most beautiful lake in the world. And who am I to argue that Lake Rusted Horseshoe on Highway 151 north of Cleveland is not the most beautiful lake in the world? However, if you're a world traveler like some of the people that come to these seminars, they'll almost always say the most beautiful lake in the world is Lake Como in Italy. That is, until they've seen Lake Atitlan. I mean, come on, who'd have thought the most beautiful lake in the entire world is in Guatemala? And of course, the U.S. State Department warns you should not go to Guatemala. It's too chaotic and unsafe, which is perfectly fine with all the expats I know down here. Because it's a fact that as soon as the U.S. State Department starts saying a place in Latin America is nice and safe and a good destination, it turns into Costa Rica, and, well, that's when you've got paradise lost. So if the visiting consensus is that those two lakes are the most beautiful ones in the world, what's the difference? Well, for one thing, Lake Como is in a first world country and it receives millions of visitors a year. And as for Lake Atitlan, well, it's been estimated that probably only 1 in 10,000 North Americans has seen it up close and personal. And as for people I've run into who've seen both Lake Como and Lake Atitlan up close, they all say pretty much the same thing. They like Lake Atitlan slightly more. For one, it seems trapped 50, maybe 100 years back in time, and it's around 5, even 10 times less expensive to hang around and just, well, experience. Oh, and another thing, because so many rich and famous people have cottages and estates on Lake Como, turns out, unless you're boating on the lake itself, a lot of the places are off limits for us peons and regular folks. So anyway, some seminar attendees made it up to the lake, and the day after the formal seminar got over, I headed up to my favorite Lake Atitlan Hotel. It cost me a cool 55, or was it 60 bucks a night, including a huge buffet breakfast. Anyway, let's just say a comparable hotel anywhere in the first world with half the view would run a couple hundred bucks a night. Now, just to give you the layout of the lake, surrounding it are about 12 little towns, with only about 3 or 4 of them accessible by car, and the rest by little boats, or what they call lanchas. So each one of these towns has a pier or a dock or two. That's where you pick up a public boat or lancha. They're coming in and out about every half an hour, but it really depends on how fast they fill up with people. The maximum capacity of each boat is around 30, and the charge depends on which little town you're going to or coming from, anywhere from $2 to $3. So anyway, to get to Lake Atitlan, let's say from Guatemala's International Airport, you take a car or a taxi or a shuttle bus, and that could be anywhere from a 2.5 to 3.5 hour ride. And the least expensive way, of course, is chicken bus, which I never recommend. Though clueless gringos and backpackers do it all the time, and that might cost you a whole $3 or $4 with a couple of transfers. However, the cheapest, safest, most reliable way is to take what they call a camioneta. That would be a little van. They're always at the airport. They'll take you to the nearest city, Antigua, for like $10, and then for another $10, you'll grab another camioneta in Antigua, and it'll take you to Lake Atitlan for around $10 more. Now, no matter how you get to Lake Atitlan, you'll always end up first in a city called Panaachel, right on the lake, which is kind of the most touristy town of the area. Very hippie-ish, a lot of backpackers and stuff. And that's pretty much the final destination of most weekend or day travelers. Most tourists, in fact, check that town out for 3 or 4 hours and head right back to the airport or to another destination on their itinerary, like the Caribbean side or the ruins of Tikal, even San Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, because the countries are small and all those places are within a couple of hours driving distance. And since, like I said, that first town you arrive in, Panaachel, is right on the lake, most travelers think, well, that's all there is to Lake Atitlan, but man, are they wrong. In fact, I'd say 4 out of 5 travelers never get past that little city to see the other towns. Oh, and by the way, it's a popular destination for Latin American tourists. Only about 1 in 20 tourists there is from the US, Canada, or Europe. The rest are from other Latin countries, so basically almost no English is spoken. Now, I'm not trying to give you a travelogue here or promote the place too much, but I'm mentioning this to set you up for a crazy-ass story that could only happen to gringos in Latin America. Now, like I said, there's about 12 or so little towns around the lake. Their population ranging from maybe 500 for the really small towns to up to 20,000 people for the largest town called Santiago. And, like I mentioned, the day trippers go to this little town of Panaachel, but that's really where the journey starts, and you have to stay overnight, or at least a couple of nights, to grab a boat in the morning and to hit one of those other little towns, or maybe 2 or 3 of those little towns. In fact, you can take in 2 or 3 of them in one day. Anyway, the day after the seminar ended, I landed in Panaachel and decided to go to the larger town, Santiago. If you get there early in the morning, you could spend the day there and see a lot of cool stuff, plus a very special attraction. They've got a unique little sanctuary for one of those bad boy indigenous saints I mentioned in a previous show. You might remember me talking about those unofficial Catholic saints. A few shows ago, I mentioned how all this came about. How when the conquistadors landed so long ago and the Catholics came in and killed all the shamans and stuff, they tried to convert and recruit all the indigenous people over to Catholicism. Which was not an easy job, because they had their own customs and idols and saints, etc. And the astute leaders of the Catholic Church figured, well, they'll be pretty lenient with these guys and let them have a few of their idols, as long as they embraced all the Catholic icons, teachings, and saints. Now, Catholics up in the first world would never go for this, but down here, things are quite mixed up. In fact, I've heard true blue first world Roman Catholics say, these indigenous people, they're not really Catholics, they embrace the demonic. But to me and so many other expat gringos with a sense of humor, we think the whole thing's rather amusing. Especially the crazy fallen bad boy saint called Maximón, whom I was going to visit that day. By the way, he's the indigenous patron saint of any and all vices. You gotta love it, huh? So where can you find this guy? Well, he's in Santiago Atitlan, where he stays in a little house. Or I should say, there's a life-size statue of him in the little house, and I can tell you, you don't want to miss this if you're at the lake. It's a real trip. More on that later. Anyway, I make it down to the dock in Panaachel, the first town you arrive in at the lake, to grab a boat to Santiago de Atitlan. Takes about 20 minutes by boat. By the way, boats are called lanchas. Now, everywhere there are public boats or lanchas that dock every 20 minutes or so. And the captain waits till there are about 30 people in the boat, and they take off. By the way, there are private boats, or lanchas too, and don't get sucked into one of those, because all you gotta do is wait around 10 or 15 minutes, and a boat will fill, and you'll take off for $2 or $3, instead of taking a private lancha, an identical boat, that'll cost you $50. And I've seen many a clueless gringo come as a couple, or maybe a small family, and plunk down $50 to take one of these private jobs. And they're sucked in only because, you see, they've never been to Atitlan before. It's their first trip, and they don't know the drill. Now, you see, the private lancha captains use a trick to snag clueless gringos. They'll spot you a couple of blocks before you get to the dock, and they'll run up and say, lancha, lancha, and you'll think, yeah. Yeah, I need a boat, just what the doctor ordered. And they'll look legit, and they are. They'll have a little tourism badge, usually a beat-up little tourism badge. And you'll mention the town or towns you want to go to, and he'll lead you over to his boat on that dock. And it looks exactly like one of the public lanchas that I mentioned, except because it's private, the only people in that boat will be you, or you and your significant other, or you and your tiny little group or family. Everyone else is packed 30 to a boat on a public launch, paying $3, and you're paying 50. And those are the little tricks you have to watch out for. And I guess one of the reasons you listen to this program, right? Now remember, we're pretty much way off the traditional gringo tourist trail, so everybody will speak Spanish. But then again, who knows, you might want to take a private launch because you don't want to be packed in with the sweaty masses. In that case, you can knock them down to around maybe $30 or $35. You can do some dickering. Now remember, I'm talking $30 to $50 for the boat. That means you can pack in a lot of people yourself in your own group. So it could be worth it if you have 10 or more people. Then it would work out to $3 or less per person. But if it's just a couple or four people, you're really getting ripped off. So don't be an idiot. Now remember, these lanchas look identical, so you could get sucked into that scam. Beware. Then again, I've had this conversation with a few gringos who said, "Johnny, you tightwad, that's a hell of a cheap deal. To get a private boat ride around this lake? For $30 to $50, man, if I was in the States, I'd pay $200. And that would be on the most beautiful lake in the world, just north of Cleveland. Okay, so maybe I am kind of pitching this show to gringos who want to save some money. Then again, there are gringos who are listening to this show who would drop that kind of dough as a tip for their golf caddy. But here's the thing, if you take the private launch, you're only saving maybe 10 or 15 minutes on the trip. The only advantage is you take off right away, whereas the other public launches are waiting to get their 30 people maximum before they shove off. By the way, none of those little towns on the lake are more than a 20-minute ride on a boat. So anyway, I jump on a boat with a couple of gringos who want to see that bad boy Saint Maximon in Santiago. And then people start piling in, and more people start piling in. And finally, all the seats are filled. People are standing in this little boat, actually stooping because there's a little canvas top on it, protect from rain. It is the rainy season, you know. And there's a little sign in the back where the captain stands, his hand on the tiller, and it says, maximum capacity, 30 people. And by now, there's 40, even 50 people in the boat. Sure, most are very little people, but there are 50 people in the boat. So, being a gringo that can't swim very well, I said, really, quite loudly, you're overloading this boat. It's against regulations. 30 to the boat, no more. Now, I can't remember if I was the first one to say that, but there was a guy and his wife and his two kids from Colombia. Now, remember, we're talking off the gringo tourist trail here, so I guess in the boat there were probably two Americans, one Canadian, and two European hippies, the rest indigenous and Latinos. And strangely enough, all around the lake you'll find lots and lots of neo-quasi and occasionally vintage, overripe, scruffy, and sometimes gentrified geriatric hippies and young hippie clones. And though wine may improve with age, hippies don't. So why and what's that all about? Well, because you could say there's absolute freedom there. It's like it was back in the 50s and 60s in the States. In fact, you could be there for days and never see a single cop. And there's no violence, virtually no crime unless you're walking around at night with a wallet on your head. Or big, and I mean really big, into the drug scene. Meanwhile, back in the boat, it's overloaded by about 20 people. And the Colombian guy really started getting pissed. And he started saying very loudly, in Spanish of course, that he was not going to allow his kids in a boat that was overloaded. On top of that, there wasn't a single life preserver in the boat, and they're required too. By the way, they're called chalecos here. Chaleco. Which basically translates to vest. Then another guy chimed in saying he couldn't swim either, and he yelled, "I want my chaleco." And the captain's little helper jumped up on the dock, ran over to a little building that looked like an outhouse, and pulled out some twisted, smudged, and decrepit life jackets. He tossed about 15 into the boat, figuring that might quell the impending mutiny. So there wasn't one for everyone, that's for sure. Now about overloading that boat, the whole thing boils down to this, which I found out later. These captains or pilots, pilotos as they call them, do not own these boats. They rent them, just like most taxis and tuk-tuks, buses and vans. That's the setup through most of Latin America. These poor little schmucks that drive these things could never afford to buy the equipment themselves, so it's always understood that there's some guy who owns a bunch of them and he'll rent them out by the day. So anyway, all the captains and pilots are renting, and it's a fixed rate per day. So the object is to pack in as many people as you can at any given time and be clever about it because there is a lot of competition. If you pull up to one of those docks, you'll see that there might be three, four, even a half dozen little lanchas parked there. And each guy has to round up people quickly and coerce them into his boat so he can shove off faster than the next guy. So by now, there was a lot of hubbub going down in our boat. Now, neither the captain or his helper said a word while all the shouting was going down. And I mean, there was shouting. Especially from the Colombian guy who looked like he had a lot of dough. Designer, real leather handbag, Nikon professional camera getup. All the stuff only stupid, clueless gringos would be carrying on a vacation like that. Anyway, like I said, the helper and the captain were playing dumb. But they weren't about to take paying customers off that overloaded boat. Oh, and another thing, about three-quarters of the passengers on that boat were little indigenous guys and gals in their typical indigenous outfits. In fact, every tribe, and I think there's 25 tribes in Guatemala, has a complete different style of indigenous robe. And pretty much only they can tell the difference. They can tell each other apart, but we can't. And don't think they're dressed like that to amuse or impress the tourists either. That's how they dress, all the time. I know it sounds like a cliche, but they all look alike to us. Their clothes, anyway. Now, like I said, about three-quarters of all boats going around that little lake are filled with indigenous people, and I discovered by hook and crook they don't pay the same price as gringos and foreigners and even local Latinos. When we pay $2 or $3, they pay about $1. In fact, it's all pretty clandestine. They shove the dough in the hand of the little helper so fast you can barely see how much it is. But if you look close, you'll see it's a lot less than you pay. On top of that, nobody's talking. In fact, I've asked a few indigenous people what they pay to ride on those boats, and they say, depends. Depends. Of course, they all speak Spanish, but they also speak their own indigenous languages, which they quickly break into when they don't want others to figure out what they're talking about. Which is, of course, why my parents spoke Swahili around the house. Just kidding. So anyway, when they've got three-quarters of the boat paying about $1 for their passage, and the rest of us gringos and backpacker tourists paying $3, you can see why they overload their boats if they can get away with it. Now, like I said, the captain and his helper were unresponsive. They did bring some life jackets, but the commotion was still going down about having the boat overloaded. Then, that's when I pulled rank. I said, look, smile while I take your photo. Then I said, I'm from Inguat. Those are the initials of the Guatemalan Tourism Authority. I said, be prepared to be famous and probably fined heavily. That's when he ducked his head low, pulled his baseball cap over his eyes, and did everything possible to dodge that photo. Now, of course, I was BSing him, but I thought it might throw the fear of God into him, or at least the fear of Maximón, the local bad boy indigenous patron saint I was on my way to see. That's when the rich Colombian guy stood up and said, we're leaving. Me and my family won't stay in a boat that's overloaded. So they got out, and we got out, and the boat took off, still overloaded by around 5 or 10 people, and short on life jackets. So we just jumped into the next available boat, was half filled already, and boy, I'll tell you what, that captain had seen and heard everything that went down in that previous boat. So he meticulously counted everyone until he got to 30, handed everyone life jackets from that little outhouse on the dock, and actually apologized to me and the Colombian guy for the other captain's behavior and lack of concern. Though I think the real reason he was sucking up to us is because he thought I really was from the Ministry of Tourism. Because I saw the captain's little helper mouth the word Inguat in his ear before we got on board. Inguat is the pronunciation of the first letters in the Department of Tourism, etc., etc., in Guatemala. And actually, they're just another corrupt, toothless agency of the government, but they can and will act if, for example, a hotel gets too many complaints or a gringo dies of food poisoning at a restaurant. In Latin America, you know, it's government by crisis. Sound familiar? And you know, thinking about that great service we got on that second boat, I think I just might Photoshop me an Inguat badge. Could come in handy, you know? So then, what about the purpose of that trip? To see that bad boy Saint Maximón? Well, it was really worth the trip. Now, when you go to the house that Maximón happens to be in, and by the way, every year on May 8th, right after the Catholic holiday of Semana Santa, which would be Easter, he changes houses. That's every single year. He's kind of like a traveling drunken uncle who actually commands some respect. Now, I don't know how they select a house, but you're not going to find him in a luxury palace. It's always kind of a scruffy room, very dark, the window shades drawn, even boarded up, and there's always a coffin in the room with Christmas tree lights all over it. I don't get the connection, but I don't get a lot of things in Latin America. Anyway, people are kneeling down in front of his life-size statue. And believe me, he's no Andre the Giant. He's a little wooden guy about 5 foot tall, eyes closed, prune-faced, with a lit cigarette or cigar in his mouth at all times, money stuffed in his pants, belt, and shirt pocket, kind of like an indigenous pole dancer, and people kneeling, lighting candles, making offerings to him, the place heavy with incense and cigarette and cigar smoke, and everyone there is praying for him to do one of three things. Help him have luck with business and money, help them with love and romance, or help them get even with someone who's done them wrong. Because remember, he's a bad boy saint and can do certain nasty trickster stuff when he's in the mood. Oh, and by the way, the spelling of this guy, Max Shimon's name, is M-A-X-I-M-O-N. M-A-X-I-M-O-N. Look it up. Anyway, like I said, every year he's in a different scruffy little house or location, so you have to ask around. Ask a tuk-tuk driver. He'll tell you where he is this year. Better yet, give the tuk-tuk driver a buck and he'll take you there. However, don't be surprised if you have to walk down some bad little alleyways and dirt corridors. In fact, it could be a little bit scary. But don't worry, there's really no crime in these little towns, none to speak of. Anyway, if you're on a pilgrimage to see Max Shimon, they say you'll be protected and no harm will ever come to you. Unless, of course, you take pictures of Max Shimon and don't pay the buck and a half the owners of the house charge. Because, you see, if you steal a picture of him without paying, you can be sure he'll do some of his bad boy tricks on you. Anyway, if you're in the area, it's a real trip. I'll tell you, it's nothing like visiting Grant's tomb. It's closer to visiting the set of The Walking Dead. The whole thing's kind of mysterious and spooky, which makes it all the cooler, doesn't it? Now, those of you, of course, who are watching us on YouTube will get to see Max Shimon in all his glory, or whatever you want to call it. By the way, gringos and expats who visited Lake Atitlan often say, man, I would just love to live here the rest of my life. Not next door to Max Shimon or in the neighborhood, but anywhere else. Because pretty much everywhere, the views are absolutely spectacular. You have to see it to believe it. So visitors almost always say, Johnny, where are the best places for a gringo expat to live around the lake? What towns are safe? What are rents like? What about potable water and sewage, land costs, internet, phone service, and all that? Well, let's just say you're going to be truly amazed at what kind of land and housing deals you can get in the various towns and locations around the lake. In fact, if you're watching this on YouTube right now, you're going to see some of the photos I took just this week. Listings of properties for rent and for sale all around the lake, all of them with the $1 million, or I should say $10 million views. In fact, there's a house for rent I'm putting up on YouTube. I believe it's $600 a month with, like I said, a $10 million view. Anyway, a lot of people have asked me about Airbnbs, too. Yep, they're popping up all over Latin America. And when you talk about Airbnbs, you know the people that put them up on the internet are very savvy, and you're gonna most likely pay gringo prices. Why? Because it's gringos and world travelers and wealthy Latins that look up on the sites to find these places. Which is why I occasionally receive an email from people saying, look at Johnny, I'm checking out Airbnb prices in Central or South America, whatever. And you know, they're pretty expensive. Maybe they're very cool places, but man, those are first world prices. Well, what do you expect? Let's face it, if you were putting up your house or apartment as an Airbnb for rent, wouldn't you want to squeeze the last dime you can out of the place? That's exactly what gringos do. And who are these people putting up Airbnbs? They're mostly gringos or gringo wannabes with dough. Sure, there are a few average types doing it too, but when it comes to Latin America, most gringos and expats would not want to stay in a house of an average Latin, because to us that would be lower middle class or worse. Again, it's all about the neighborhood. And I know there are some very nice Airbnbs in very bad locations, and some of them in very nice, safe, good locations too, but so far out and away from the city and the action or wherever you're hanging out that you're going to have to rent a car to get around, and that'll cost you $50 or so a day. In fact, I can tell you about a very, very nice Airbnb in Guatemala City. I know the lady who owns it. She's a very nice person, very honest, pretty much first world all the way. But that Airbnb is in a very dangerous area of town, even though it's centrally located and a huge superhighway goes right by it. So then how are you going to know that? Plus, it gets very top ratings on the Airbnb TripAdvisor, or however they rate those things. So yes, you can have a very nice place, but when you step outside, that's when the problems begin, unless, of course, you have your own car or transportation. So you really have to make an honest assessment of the neighborhood, not just the place. Then again, I know of some Airbnbs in spectacular Latin neighborhoods, gated, guarded, totally protected, all the amenities, tennis courts, swimming pools, saunas, jacuzzis, super high-quality gyms and such. And some too may seem like pretty good or even great deals, but many of them are way out in the burbs. 5, 10, 20, 30, even 50 kilometers from where the action is or where you want to hang. So you will need transportation, but how are you going to know that if you haven't done a lot of investigation? Would be great, huh, if you found a fantastic Airbnb, all the photos look terrific, but you had to pay 10 or 20 bucks for a taxi every time you wanted to head out. I mean, what good is it to spend 40 bucks a night on a nice Airbnb when you spend 50 bucks on taxis every day? Because again, you're not renting an Airbnb just to hang out in the neighborhood. You're in a foreign country, you got places to go, things to do, sights you want to see, right? But I'm not poo-pooing the Airbnb idea. It's a great one, and there are a lot of nice, cool ones out there. Great locations, reasonably priced. But I'll tell you right now, I know some hotels that can compete head-to-head with a lot of the nice Airbnbs. And you got the hotel amenities, maid service every day, and you're right in the center of the action. And since Airbnbs seem to be the fad, hot buzzword now, people are talking about it and everyone wants to get into the act. The fact is, I wish they would. That would bring in a lot more competition and the prices will drop and that would be good for everyone. I guess except for the B&B owners. However, I don't think 1 in 1,000 people is thinking about what's going to happen shortly. The so-called big blowout or greater depression. You've heard that term. Because that's when you have to ask yourself, who's going to be traveling? Who's going to have the dough? And who's going to be able to get permission to leave the country to do that? Because that's what it's coming to. Which is why when gonna-bes and wannabes and expats who come down here to live say, Johnny, I'd like to build a hotel or have a B&B or whatever. I'm thinking, yeah, you're the one who's not thinking too far ahead into the future. There's a huge real estate bubble down here right now. It's becoming a terrific renter's market in many places. For example, you could rent a brand new house that's never been lived in. In a gated, guarded community, 1,500 to 2,000 square feet, even more, for around, get this, 400 bucks a month. And yet there's cranes all over, they're still building everywhere, like there's no end and no tomorrow. So is that what you really want to do? Start an Airbnb, mom and pop, bed and breakfast, start something up in a tourism-related industry? Well, I'll ask that question again. Who's going to be going on vacation anywhere when the next shoe drops? When the so-called Greater Depression kicks in? Remember, it'll be kicking in the first world, not much down here. So yes, do come down, buy some land, build a house, buy some distressed property, whatever. But my advice, stay away from the hotel and the hospitality business. It might seem like it's doing well now, but first, look at the reasons you're coming down to Latin America in the first place. Because you see bad, bad things on the horizon, right? And another thing, there are tens of thousands of three-bedroom houses in gated, guarded communities here in Latin America that are completely vacant. They're brand new, too. And for the owners of those developments, there's no dough coming in. And when they find out, they can list those properties as Airbnbs. What's that going to do to the hospitality business? Look out. Now, of course, I'm talking off the gringo tourist trail now, because if you go to Costa Rica, Panama, most of Mexico, you won't find those kind of deals at all. Because their economies are still being pumped up by gringo tourism. And when that type of tourism grinds to a halt because, well, it's just not a priority anymore, just think about the reasons why you're listening to this program and think about your plan B and what will work and what won't. That said, we're getting towards the end of the program right now. Don't forget to go to www.thenewexpat.com. Check out expert expat blogger John Galt and hear what he's got to say. He's had a few years of boots on the ground and runs into amazing things all the time. And don't forget to check out my YouTube channel to see all the great visuals that go along with the show. And finally, for all who are wondering when my next Expat Insider Seminar will be taking place, it'll be in early January 2017. So if you want to get on the early bird discount list, send me an email.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.